B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome into the program. Are you excited, Maz? You ready?
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
Here we go!
I got you. Look at Matt McCarthy back there. You got a little pants tent back there, kid?
Woo! Opening day, bitches!
Can't you feel it?
Oh, love opening day.
I tell you, you're being sarcastic. We can be sarcastic. I'm actually a sucker for that opening day kind of thing. The sun is out, the crack of the bat, the smell of fresh grass. When I said the email Bob Uecker on the radio, that's where I grew up with like that. I actually buy into that crap.
It reminds us of all that once was good and could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come. Oh, I love it. I love opening day. I do. I'm not really being facetious.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. I'm not mocking it. I do. I love opening day. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Absolutely love it. Always have. Some other times of the year, I'm not so crazy about.
Teot. When you see Louis Teot, how about seeing Louis Teot? El Teote. But Reggie Smith, the great Reggie Smith. Dave Henderson, the shot that he hit against the Angels. This is baseball. Oh, my. Jim Rice, Freddie Lynn. This is baseball.
I get it, dog. I'm with him. This is my favorite sport.
Oh, my goodness. I got my kid up. Watch this, for goodness sakes. This is baseball. Up here. Nobody cares about your girlfriends. Up here. This is baseball.
That was Mad Dog responding. I think it was the 100th anniversary celebration at Fenway Park a couple years ago when they just trotted out all the old timers.
Everybody is coming out of the center field bleachers. Every player, no introductions. It's on the billboard. Alive. Jerry Remy, Carlton Fisk, Dick Drago, you name it. Every old Red Sox or Bobby Doerr, Johnny, everybody. This, my friend, is baseball.
I'm sort of with them. You're right. It's starting tomorrow. I have a problem. But day one, here we got the Yankee game on here on the big screen. I'm about to fire up the Brew Crew on my phone app.
Like, this, my friend, is baseball.
See, the Yankees are already up 3-0.
Oh, I see. What do you think the excitement level is for the Red Sox here?
Oh, actually, I think relatively speaking, given the, you know, what baseball has become on the landscape, I actually think it's pretty good. And you know, it's not what it was at its peak, you know, many years ago, but it's pretty good. I've told you this before, that to me, they did nothing this offseason, Mike. They did nothing.
Well, they subtracted.
Well, right. So I was just going to say, who's the most significant acquisition that they made?
I can't. Wait a minute.
Colton Brewer.
I was going to say, the kid with the spin rate.
Colton Brewer. That's it. And despite that, when we talked about them, there was some, you know, people were eager to sort of reengage, you know, and again, that's relative to what it has been. There have been a lot of dead zones there in the past couple of years. So I think people are eager for the season. I think they recognize they have a unique team that made a historic run last year. And now here it is. Can they repeat? Nobody's repeated in baseball in a long time. Hell, it's been 10 years since a team that won the World Series even got back. The Phillies did it in 08-09. And so that's a hard enough trick unto itself. And, you know, there is the whole perception of this team could change this year depending on what they do.
What do you think? So, yeah, I was going to say, if you can narrow it down, what do you think the lead story is on the team? Like, what's the, because I have one, and that is the thing that I think you're starting to hint at, which is the window and the guys who are up for contract and how they handle all of that. And I think we've seen that here in town. A couple different examples with a couple different teams where sometimes it's worked out well, sometimes it hasn't. Have guys in the last year of their contract or guys, you know, going into free agency or guys who already know or think they've got a foot out the door. You know, it didn't work so good for Malcolm Butler, for example. The Celtics this year, it's really almost brought them down. I mean, really, it's brought them to their knees, that whole Kyrie Irving thing and that business. The Patriots yet have had some guys who've been up this past year, didn't, you know, impact Trey Flowers or Trent Brown one bit. As a, you know, so like it cuts both ways. With the Red Sox, they got a lot of guys up. They got a lot of guys up.
Sure.
And you'll hear a cut here from Alex Cora where he's even sort of admitting that, you know, I don't know what we're going to have back here next year. And so it's sort of like it is a tight window and there will be guys gone this year. And there are a lot of guys up, important guys up. And how do they handle all that? And do they put the team first? And I know baseball's, you know, an individual sport to begin with. So it's all apples and oranges. I get it. But that's the biggest hurdle on the team.
So I think I said this to you years ago when the Bruins won one. And, you know, if you win a championship, you've had a great year. You win multiple, you're a great team. So my question then is, what are these guys? How are we going to remember this group? And I think that is at stake this year for them. Because it all depends on how this season goes. If let's just say they go out, they win 100 games again, and they repeat. They're going to go down as one of the great teams in baseball history.
One of.
Back-to-back 100-win seasons and World Series.
How long is that list?
I don't know. You know, call it
20 teams,
maybe. A top 20 team.
Maybe 10.
Top 10 team?
Well, if we're talking modern
in the history
era,
of the game?
Well, the big red machine of the mid-70s won two titles in a row.
I thought it was three, but okay.
They won 75 and 76.
Okay.
I think, don't you have to put this team in that same breath?
Yeah.
The Oakland A's
won. Same with the late 90s Yankees.
Yeah, so I'm not telling
you. Did the Yankees win three straight?
Three straight and four out of five. They're not that, and they're not the A's of the early 70s. Okay, but if we're talking about.
So the Yankees early 70s, three straight?
No, the Oakland won three in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Yankees won four out of five in the late 90s. But if we're talking in the last 50 years in baseball, they're up there. I mean, they're up there to win two in a row and, you know, have a 108 win season there in the middle of it and four straight playoff appearances.
How about the Giants, the modern-day San Francisco Giants?
They never repeated, though.
They had 3-5, 3-6?
They never repeated, though. You know, I think, and I, again, I'm talking a very small, I'm not calling them a dynasty. I'm not telling you that. I'm just telling you that in a two-year period, that team, that's a pretty damn good team. You win two straight World Series and have a 108-win season under your belt.
Wow.
You're going to go down, it may go down as the greatest team in Red Sox history.
Okay, what brings them down?
I think any one of a million things, one of which is unrealistic expectations.
Okay, so, and injuries isn't on the list. Like, that's on everyone's list. Outside of injuries, what brings them down?
Okay, so this idea that they are as good as they were last year is preposterous.
Okay, but how does that bring them down? They get overconfident and sloppy and lose focus?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that just unrealistic expectations or not understanding what it really takes or forgetting what it takes to put together a championship year. Because, again, sometimes complacency. Sometimes you win one, you put it under your belt, and you think, oh, we're good, no problem.
But the level of intensity just isn't there. And that was one of the things that, at the time, I kind of mocked, what with the whiteboard and whatnot, and 108 wins ultimately. But they did play with a level of ballsiness night in, night out, even if they were playing some of the suckiest teams in the league, whether it was the Orioles or the Royals, whatever. I mean, they played like they had a hair across their ass, and that's tough to keep that level up.
And I do worry about that, especially with regard to the manager, believe it or not, because I look at Alex Cora and I say, listen, we all love the guy. How do you not? After last year, he comes in. He's a breath of fresh air compared to John Farrell. He answers questions directly. His players make mistakes. He says, we got to do better than that. That's not going to work. They go out. They win 108 games. They win 11 more in the playoffs. They beat every good team they had to face at some point during the year. They faced the three next best teams in baseball, in Houston, the Yankees, and the Dodgers, and they beat them all, and nobody beat them more than once. All of that. And Cora comes back the next year without a couple of relief pieces and says, yep, it's up to us now to figure it out. No problem. You know, we'll make do out there. We'll be all right. And my question is, do we really know what Alex Cora is yet? I mean, what he had last year was an unbelievable year. But what adversity did they really face? At what point did they have a losing streak?
I'll tell you that, honestly, when they lost game two against the Yankees, heading back to Yankee Stadium for game three. Honestly, like, they started 17-2, right?
Yes, correct.
So, I mean, you tell me.
Very little.
Like, to me, that was really the point of the season.
Yeah, there was very little that they faced in the big picture. And in the playoffs, it ramped up a little bit. But I would say, you know, there was never an opportunity for guys in the clubhouse to start griping about playing time because the team had been 500 for a month and a half. There was never anybody to start griping about pitching changes and decisions because the team had played 500 for a month and a half. There was none of that. There were none of those opportunities. Everything Cora did worked. He asked them to buy in. They did. And again, I think the guy showed us that he's capable. He's a good manager. It looks like he's a good communicator. But ball players will be ball players. And as soon as you go 500 for any stretch of time, they will start bitching that they need to be in the lineup. They will. And they didn't really, the only thing that they had during the regular season was Hanley.
Okay. So, but that ties in now to the contract thing.
Sure.
Okay. So, not that Martinez is going to get benched or anything, but he does like playing the outfield versus DH. He is in a walk year. He does think he got screwed royally on his last contract. So watch that. DH in the field, how that relates to his own, does he prioritize that versus what's best for the team? Mookie Betts up in 2 years, but has already, by the writer's dinner, been dropped to number two in the order.
Correct.
After they had the best offense in baseball, and he was the best leadoff hitter in baseball, just about. Yet they move him to two before they even really got into the next season's preparations. Why? Well, I think it was a quid pro quo on the contract. He wants more ribbies because he's going into free agency in the next year or two, next 2 years, and he wants to fill out his stat sheet. And they acquiesced. So they've already altered something on the team for an individual with Mookie Betts. That's Betts, that's Martinez. Xander Bogaerts, pretty cut and dry. He's your everyday shortstop, but he's up. Does that compel him to have a good year, or does he feel the pressure and squeeze the bat?
Sure.
Is Rick Porcello already pissed off that he doesn't have a contract? Is he pissed off? You know, I thought I heard that he's already not happy. He talked to the team in the preseason. They took care of Sale, not care of Porcello. Does that motivate him? It should. Probably will. But what if it goes the other way? We've seen that.
His name has not even come up in our discussions. Like, the idea that they would sign Porcello is, to me, it's not even broached. I think they've already decided he's gone.
Is Jackie Bradley a free agent after this year?
He's up with Mookie.
So he's got 2 years after this. Okay. So a little less urgency. But again, what if he's hitting, you know, .185 in May and Cora sits him? And he's got 2 years left until free agency. Same sort of thing. How does he handle it?
I'll tell you what, and this isn't totally contract related, but it could be depending on how it affects some of the pitchers. They made a decision at catcher this spring to send Leon down, keep Swihart on the roster. Okay? Leon is a favorite among those pitchers. So what happens if that starts to go bad and they're trying to develop Swihart and he makes mistakes?
Well, and
are the pitchers going to start sniping? If that happens with Porcello, is he going to get pissed off?
So especially for the guy up for a contract.
All of that. Like, to me, all of those things are there. And again, last year was tremendous. Really, it was a truly an extraordinary season in that it was highly unusual. But I think that can lead to unrealistic expectations and quick frustration.
We're starting baseball, Mad Dog.
Football cannot give you this.
Nope.
You care if Frank Gifford shows up at the Giant Stadium, you can care less. You care if Bob Waterfield shows up at the Rams?
Who's that?
You care less. Here, you care. This is baseball.
We're going to start baseball. Or whatever the hell you want to talk about. 617-779-0985. What brings down the Red Sox this year, if anything can? To you right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught.
get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mads, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
In the era that we are, it's very difficult to have so many guys that play in the World Series back in one team. And I don't want to make a big story out of it, obviously. I hate talking about next year, but we know where we're at. And we know that there's a lot of guys here that, you know, because of their time, whatever, I don't know. Hopefully they're back. Some of them won't be. So it's a pretty close group. And yesterday, that's why that was the message, you know. We got a chance to do something special, very special, and we're ready to go.
Right, Corey, yesterday basically acknowledging that that's sort of the window issue, you know. The old guy's gone after this year. They've kept it largely together. He only really peeled off one piece from last year. That's Kimbrel. After this year, there's going to be a couple more pieces, and they all sort of acknowledge it and know it. And my question is how they all handle it, because you can get selfish in a spot like that. And we've seen it happen on a lot of teams, a lot of teams, including the basketball team here in town. So how does that impact the Red Sox? Thankfully, baseball is really a selfish sport to begin with, so it's a lot harder for that to creep into a baseball environment than a basketball environment. But let's see. I'm still curious about it all. So that, you know, that's sort of the question. What can bring down the Red Sox? That, to me, is one of them. All right, your thoughts on everything else. Here's Pete in the car. Lead us off, Pete.
Yeah, so, Maz, you have a really convenient memory saying that the Red Sox faced no adversity last year because they faced a ton of adversity. I mean, they're coming off a year where they didn't have Big Poppy anymore. There was a leadership vacuum. I mean, David Price himself was an adversity machine. Fortnite-itis, attacking Eck, getting sharding himself against the Yankees so bad. People were wondering if he should even start in the playoffs. He had his number one pitcher gone for, like, the last part of the stretch run. The Yankees got within, what, 6 games of the lead?
That's not adversity. Would you strike that last one, Pete? You were doing okay until that one.
Pete, listen, I'm not telling you it was 100% perfect. I'm telling you that by baseball standards, that was a cakewalk.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
I mean, look, again,
the closest I got was 6 games.
I mean, I know everybody thinks I just kick the crap out of them all the time. All I'm telling you is that they started out 17-2. Were they ever in jeopardy of having their season get away from them?
I'm telling you, the first time they were in jeopardy of their season getting away from them was when it was 1-1 headed back to New York in the DS, and Price had just sharded himself, to use the caller's vernacular, and the bullpen looked like crap, and we sort of said, uh-oh, this is where it all comes to end.
No, he did. That caller just reminded me, though. Remember that late summer when the Yankees got a little close? People started freaking out and people thought it was going to be 78 all over again. We started taking those stupid phone calls.
Okay.
From all these people that were mocking me for saying, okay, like, oh, you're not taking these wins seriously enough. They all freaked out in late summer.
They were happened. 9 up in the middle of August.
That happened. No, I mean, you're right. There was a little creepage, and then the old-timers said, I remember. But that doesn't mean the team felt it. Did the team ever get hot under the collar?
No.
Okay, so that's sort of Maz's point.
Yeah, not even close.
And David Price, sure. You know, he had he had to cross a threshold. But that adversity sort of self-inflicted, right?
Totally. And again, the way I like to put it is, were they ever in danger of the season getting away from them? And my answer is not even close, really, until October.
Yeah.
Right? In which case, everybody's in the same boat, largely.
Did they ever trail against Houston?
No. They never trailed in any series.
Right. So they, you know.
I mean, they were pretty much wire to wire.
The tightest it felt was after 1-1 headed to New York.
So, of course, there are always going to be little bumps. But again, by baseball standards, it was largely a cakewalk.
Phil in Malden. What do you got, Phil?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I don't see anything bringing them down. I don't think they're going to win another 108 games. But I look at these first five rotation, and Price is fifth. He might be the one keg in the rotation.
Okay, so you're worried about Price, but why are you shaking your head?
Because Price isn't really fifth. People are saying this now. Like,
he got pushed back in the spring, right?
Yeah. Look at their rotation. They're so good. Price is the number five starter. I mean, come on. Price is the number two starter. He just got bumped back because of an illness in camp. That's it. But he's every bit as valuable to them as he was last year.
So he said, I don't see anything can bring him down. And we didn't even mention it in the first segment. I mean, it's just too rote to go there, but can't the bullpen bring them down?
Of course. And so this is the mentality that I'm worried about, is that because last year was so relatively easy, or they made, let me rephrase, they made it look easy. But it's not, and we all know it's not. The Red Sox have been in existence for 119 years. They've never had a year like they had last year. Never. Not really. So all of a sudden now they're just going to do it again? Like that type, that's the part that I think people miss. And, you know, again, the manager was good, but there were some mistakes along the way too, particularly at the end that people forget.
Well, okay, for example?
Okay, they were up 2-0 in the World Series. Game three went 19 innings. And he pushed Eovaldi in there and gambled.
Yeah.
I mean, he managed very, very aggressively, but he gambled.
Right.
He lost. It was 2-1. Do you remember game four at all?
Of course. They were up. They were down 5-0 or something.
Down 4-0 going into the seventh.
Yeah.
And in the sixth inning, Cora let Eduardo Rodriguez face Yasiel Puig to give up a 3-run home run, or turn a 1-0 game into a 4-0 game, and admitted after the game that he was kicking himself over it during the late innings. The only thing that saved him is that Dave Roberts was dumber than he was. So, you know, that series was close at one point to being 2-2. It was close, and the manager was in the middle of it.
Okay, so look, those game decisions, to say he's a little unproven, I don't think it's unfair. He's only been at it a year, and, you know, you just got to see that over the balance of time. So game decisions. I'm more curious about the thing you mentioned with Cora. Adversity. He is someone who I've come to learn listens and reads to it, reads it all, man.
He pays attention to everything.
Oh, he has got rabbit ears and is like, remember after the series, he's demanding apologies of the media because of David Price and whatnot? Like, geez. So he's one of these guys. All right. Well, they had 1 3-game losing streak last year?
Something like that.
I mean, you know, he's never really felt it. I want to see how he responds, if he can handle it.
Totally. And again, wait till the players start backbiting. And maybe they don't this year. Maybe they have another great year and it's all good. But at some point in his managerial career, the players will backbite because that's what players do.
Paul in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, how you doing? How you guys doing? I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay, babe.
I think Chris Sale might be the problem. I think they put a lot of eggs in that basket, and not to take away that he's not. We don't need him, but I think they gave him way too much, and for that kind of money, I think they could have got a lot of prospects and made this team a lot better as far as our pitching. I don't trust any of it.
You don't trust any of it. You trust the starting pitcher.
I trust Sale, but I don't think he's durable. Okay. I think he's a toothpick. He doesn't have any meat to his bone, and he's not durable.
Okay, so listen. And, look, you don't think Chris Sale this year could bring them down? Like, that's not...
See, that's a long-term question.
Yeah, if you want to tell me that the Chris Sale contract over time is going to be an albatross, you definitely put it on the list, for sure. This year, worst that happens is he gets hurt, and you've still got a great starting rotation, and you should be fine.
Exactly. Look, they won the World Series effectively without him in the postseason.
Thank you.
I mean, he wasn't the same guy. So now, can they get through a whole season? I don't know. I mean, you know, the injury thing there is there for every team, not just them and him. But what the caller's talking about is a long-term thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's about 2020 and beyond.
And I think it's fair. I think that's a fair thing. You know, should they have signed him to that contract? But again, contract, that to me is, you know, look, I said with the Celtics, because we looked at the Celtics in the landscape. You say, well, there's nothing here that could really, they're going to go to the finals. There's nothing here except, and it turns out I was kind of right. You know, mouths to feed and this whole thing and Kyrie's future and how that all plays in. It turns out it's really impacted them.
Egos.
Yeah. And like I said, it's really harder for that to impact a baseball team because it's so inherently individual to begin with. But that's sort of on the table for this team. And a lot of guys going for their money either this year or next. So we'll see how that impacts it. We'll continue with your thoughts on the Red Sox on opening day. I'll give you a Bruins minute, though, right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Listening to Felger and
Nash.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha
hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5
The
Sports Hub.
Crew, far circle, Pastrnak fires. He scores. It might have been Jake DeBrusk. We'll see who gets it. But the Bruins able to crank in a power
faceoff. Working around the perimeter, move that puck into left wing circle for David Pastrnak. And he's going to rip this one home now. And Lundqvist got a piece of it, but then it trickled past him.
For David Pastrnak, that's his fourth regular season hat trick.
All right, I guess the thumb's okay, which is huge for them. Huge. I mean, does that prove it last night that the injury's not going to impact him?
No.
Why?
Because, just because he's good one day doesn't mean he won't have a bad day. Like, I still need to see more. I need to see it more consistently.
That's anybody, whether they're hurt or not.
No. But I mean specifically with regard to post-injury. Some days will feel better than others. I don't think that that's that unusual. I need to see more, but I'm encouraged. I'll tell you that. I'm encouraged. But, you know, he had one good night. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see him consistently get back to where he was.
I just like the velocity on the shots.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that tells you something. And if he's, you know, is he still playing with the little wrist thing?
I think he's going to wear that throughout. Yeah. He's wearing a splint. I told you, okay. When I was at that workout, he had it on.
And the way he looked the first couple of games, you know, was that general rust or was that the fact that he was wearing a thing on his wrist? You didn't know. I didn't know. So the fact that he can still shoot the puck like that, I think is hugely encouraging. He's
sure.
Saying he's handled it well and all of that. So I don't want to say it's a non-story now, but, I mean, he's shown what he's capable of. That's a huge development.
I thought his two best plays last night were the passes.
Oh,
but anyway.
God, the pass to DeBrusk, where he froze Lundqvist with that little shoulder dip, was so filthy. I can't tell you. It's tremendous.
Even the one to Bergeron, both of them, ridiculous.
Okay,
that
so
was a pass.
The pass to Bergeron was amazing. Amazing.
They were ridiculous.
This is exactly what he wanted to do. It's like hit the target on Bergeron's tip. Brilliant. Okay, so... That's good news for the Bruins. I also love that most of the damage was with Krejci and DeBrusk. That's what they should do. That's what I think Cassidy wants to do. I think that's what Cassidy wants to do.
Makes him a better team.
I think they should have Pastrnak, Krejci, DeBrusk. That's the line. And then you find out if it's Heinen up there, or I'd give Johansson, you know, Johansson's used to playing with great players. He played with Ovechkin and Backstrom in New York and, with the Capitals. So, I'd look at Johansson there, and I'd look at, obviously, Heinen, who I think's looked okay up there. And to me, that's the lineup. And if you're in a game and you need a goal, then fine. You put Pastrnak back up there, and you're desperate in the third period, then you do it. But to me, that's how you start out. And that's, you know, Cassidy even mentioned it before Pastrnak came back. That's what he wants to do. He even mentioned last night, Jimmy, did you have the cut? Cassidy was asked how Krejci and Pastrnak looked together there.
I did like what they did together. I don't know if Fluto Saturday if we'll stick with it, to be perfectly honest. We'll look at it again. Usually video will tell you a few things on did maybe there's some chemistry with certain guys that you don't see in the course of the game. You go, okay, well, maybe this will work. So we'll see how it plays out. Somebody ends up on the wrong side, whether it's Johansson or Heinen as a winger, the left stick. So at some point, we want to get solidified on that as well.
Okay, don't worry about the left stick on the right side, would you please? Would you give Krejci two guys to play with? Come on.
I mean, I just think Krejci's had like a renaissance, for crying out loud. That's what the year has been for him. And if you're going to win it and make a run to win it, you got to have more than one good line.
Oh, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, that was the number one reason that there are a couple, but I don't know, maybe number one was secondary scoring. You shut down the first line, then what do you got? You got nothing. So give Krejci, he's having a really, as you said, a renaissance year, really good year. Give him two good wingers, would you please? All right, that's item number two. Item number three, the goaltending thing. So Halak wins last night, 20 wins. It's the first time the Bruins have had two 20-win goalies since Moog and Lemelin in 89-90. So, which I just find is an interesting jumping off point to...
That was a fun team.
That was a fun team. But remember how they handled Lemelin and Moog?
I don't. You'll remember better than I do.
I mean, he was Moog's team, but they went back and forth. One guy was hot, he went. The other guy was hot, they went. I can't, you know, I thought it was Moog in the playoffs, so I can go back. Or, you know, it wasn't 88 Lemelin's year when they beat the Canadians and then went to the finals.
Sounds right.
That was Lemelin. And then I think by the time you got to 90, it was Moog. But it was, you know, not that it was like, you know, back in those days, we didn't have talk radio, so was there a goalie controversy? But in my mind, they sort of went back and forth. And in the playoffs, I can't remember exactly, but it was like, you know, that was a team, and those were goalies where, you know, either could play and you'd felt okay. And I'm not saying we're quite there with Halak, but that's just a jumping off point to, I don't know if Cassidy's the biggest believer in Tuukka Rask.
Moog played all five games in the finals. Lemelin got into one, or he might have started one.
I'm not about the final. Okay, about the, do you have any of the previous rounds in front of you?
Sure, I'll check.
Did they go back and forth at all during the playoffs? So 90 was Moog's team. But anyway, I just don't know if Cassie's the biggest believer in Rask. And it was really eye-opening, I thought, after that Tampa game, when Rask really didn't do anything wrong. And Cassie comes out and says, well, we could have used a save there. It's like, whoa. So, you know, I mean, this isn't me bashing Tuukka. This is me wondering about the coach and how does he feel about Tuukka. And I just think more than any other year that if Rask, you know, gets into one of these playoff dips, that this coach would be more willing to go to the other guy than the other guy would.
It was pretty much Moog throughout.
It was Moog.
Yeah. First series went seven. He played six of the games. He played them all in the next round, the same after that. So it was really him all the way through.
That first round, the whale?
It was seven-gamer.
Yeah, I remember that was a great series. But anyway, okay. So Cassie, I guess, was asked about this because that criticism of Rask after the Tampa game, I didn't even think that Rask was on the table after that game. And so I guess Cassie was asked about it yesterday, and he said, well, I'm not a detractor, Cassidy said of Rask. So he addresses it head on. I'm not a detractor. I think he's been a real good goalie for the Bruins, played well against Tampa. Toronto was a little bit more of a run-and-gun series. I think he's talking about last year in the playoffs. I think both goalies had their moments where they were fishing pucks out of the net. That's right. But I would just say that's when you're equal to Frederik Andersen, that's not a compliment. Anyway, but at the end of the day, we are confident in him, said Cassidy of Rask. We're fortunate. We've got Yarrow, too. Terrific numbers. Who's got a playoff resume. So we've got two to pick from. If some injury or performance-related issue, we can go to the next guy. Tuukka, I assume, will be our number one goalie going into the playoffs or game one starter. Between now and then, we'll sort that all out.
I mean, it's an endorsement, but I wouldn't call it ringing.
But he's firmly putting it out there that...
I'll have a quick hook.
Yeah, but Halak's got good numbers and a playoff resume.
Right. We'll start Tuukka. He's our guy. But if it starts to go bad, I'm going to make a change.
Okay, so that one stood out to me. I think that's interesting. And then just real quick, finally, Cam Neely spoke before the game. Not to us. He hates us. He doesn't talk to us. But he talked to the media, and one of the things he was asked about was the playoff format. And this is the second straight year the Bruins are going to have to, you know, I think if you look at the league standings, the Bruins division has three of the top six teams or seven teams, something like that. They have the best team in Tampa. The Bruins are the second best team in the whole league. And for the second straight year, you're going to face the best team in Tampa in the second round. Where if this were seeded the old way, 1-8, we'd be 2 versus 7. And who is seven? I'm not even sure. I don't know. I'm not even sure. Carolina, probably someone like that. And so you've got a much tougher matchup in Toronto and then a much tougher matchup in the round two with Tampa with the current in-division format. And Cam Neely had some comments and saying that, well, we'd like to see it changed. I don't know if anyone in the league does, but it's not exactly fair. And I just want to say, you know, quit crying. Don't cry about that.
I mean, that's how I feel. Like, too bad. You're in a tough division. That's the way it goes. Sometimes you're in an easy division. Sometimes you're in a hard one.
And if he were sitting here in front of me, I absolutely would not say that to his face. But really, quit crying. Like, so wait a minute. Tampa is sitting right there, the best team in the league in several years. If it were the old format, you'd have to face him in the third round. Now you're going to have to face him in the second. What's the diff? You got to get by him anyway. If you're going to be the best, you got to beat the best. You know, please, I don't want to hear this. Go beat him.
So this type of argument to me is all about, well, we could have gone three rounds instead of two. What difference does that make? I mean, I know you can
for
sell
the Jacobs, it matters.
Yeah, for him and the Jacobs, okay. It does matter. Yeah,
but to me, you know, and I get that. But my point is, ultimately, you're either winning the cup or you're not. Like, that's how I look at it. And so I understand you can say, well, you had a good year. But really, you're going to have to beat good teams to win the cup.
So you said, would I like to see the two seed play the seven? Yeah, probably. He also made a good point. And that is, the reason they went to this is because they want to build up rivalries and hatred and, you know, more fierce competition in the next regular season, which is the way it used to be in the old Adams division, like the Whalers and Buffalo and Montreal, obviously, those playoff series would carry over to the next year. And Cam said, and again, paraphrasing, it's a little bit of a different league. It's not the same. And he's right. You know, is there any extra juice with the Ottawa Senators?
No.
No. Okay, so there's a little more with Toronto, I'll give you that. There's always juice with Montreal, but is there more juice with Florida or Tampa or any of these teams that are in your division because you might face them in the play? I don't feel like there is.
No, and there's almost no fighting in the game anymore.
There's no fighting anyway. So I think that's a fair point. That thing that they were looking for, that competition the next year and that carrying over and building of the rivalries, I don't know if that's totally happened. So I think that's fair. But I don't want to hear this crying about it should be 2-7. 2-7. Now beat Toronto, you're better than them. And then let's see what you got against Toronto. So you face them a round earlier than you would have in that old format. Big deal. Go beat them. There's your Bruins Minute. To your phones on everything, including the new wheel of gutless bums right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Alcohol.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Matt Barnes.
You again?
Colton Brewer.
Cole.
Ryan Brazier.
Brazzy.
And those other guys.
It's back for 2019. An all-new Wheel of Gutless Bums.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high-leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
Barnes. Brazier.
Brewer.
Thornburg.
Johnson.
Thornburg.
Brazier.
Barnes.
Embry.
Work. Brazier.
Johnson.
Thornburg.
Velasquez.
Embry.
Johnson.
And today's gutless this bum is...
We don't know who today's gutless bum is.
That's the point yet.
Yeah, well, we still don't know who the closer is, do we?
Nope.
Oh, no, but there will be one. A gutless bum, I mean. I couldn't care less about the clothes.
I'm joking. So, it takes next-level talk radio abilities, which Jim Murray and we here at the Felger and Maz have, to have a team win the World Series, have their bullpen be a strength of the team, have them basically shove it in our face for being so wrong last year, and then come right back next year on day one and do it again.
Yep. I love it. As seen on television, the Wheel of Gutless Bums. You can get there.
You can have the home version. Yeah, you can spin your own.
Included free with your purchase of Flexio products.
But again, they are, you know, I sort of arrogant cavalier for a team to say, well, we won it despite this deficiency last year, so we're just going to do it again, is arrogant slash cavalier slash something, overconfident. And we'll see if they survive it. And not only did they bring back the same thing, they actually made it worse. Last year, they at least had a closer. They don't have that this year.
No, no. And, Kimbrel, in the grand scheme of things, as a regular season closer, was fine. I mean, good. He was on the higher end. And Kelly had a good first half last year. I still, I never believed in Kelly, but nonetheless. And now, honestly, to me, it's the number one thing to watch with the team, and not just the performance. I mean, how does Cora do it? Let's see who he goes to and when. I'm always interested in that at the start of a year.
Okay, baseball, mixing in some Bruins if you want. We're getting to some football next hour as well. Mike in Wakefield on the Bees last night. Go ahead, Mike.
Gentlemen, what's going on? Real quick, to get back to one of your crazy callers, they're paying Chris Sale almost as much for his attitude in the clubhouse that they are for his arm. I mean, that guy is good for competitive nature. Now, real quick, Maz, you got to stop taking whatever Murray's giving you to smoke, man. Pastrnak looks great, and the fact he's going to keep that splint on just means that he can do it with that splint on. But have a night last night. I mean, speaking of attitude, I mean, after Bergie took that elbow to the face,
tremendous,
and they were just licking their chops, waiting to get at him. And you know what? They did their job. They got the business part of it done, and then they had a good old brouhaha at the end. I love fighting. I think fighting should be more prevalent in hockey than it is right now.
No question. Not enough fighting. I'll just cut you off there before you're going too much. To me, again, they had that thing with that them backing each other up. Bergeron taking that weird sort of back check.
It was dirty.
Yeah, was it? Do you think it was that bad?
Purposely turned his back to smash into him. Of course it was.
That was borderline.
Yeah.
But I don't care. You know, I don't care that Bergeron. I like that he overreact. You know, Bergeron sort of overreacted. Fine, which I don't care. Overreact. And punch him. Love it. All for it. And then Char starts chirping at the Rangers bench.
It's the best part of that whole game. Just stares at that bench and there's no takers.
No, there actually was. There was some toothless dude who stood up and sort of went back on him. Like, who are you? What idiot is doing this? And then so the guy, was it Anderson that hit Bergeron? I can't remember his name. Backus tried to engage him late in the game. You remember Backus? I kept slamming him, this guy into the corner. That's who that was. So he wanted to go. Like, I just, the fight on the team is tremendous.
Yeah, it is. It's great. And you know what? I Murray and I were out last night, so I didn't see every bit of the Bruins game. We were out at the Mr. Sid event. And, but I heard Beers talking about it on the way back. And it's the one thing that I would caution the Bruins about. Five games to go.
Go, take it easy.
Right. Just be careful. Okay, just be careful, because they're thin as it is. They don't have, you know, they lose Johansson, they lose someone else, and Pasternak for any period of time. Like, they just don't have the bodies to fill it in. Don't do anything stupid. Don't do anything brewing.
Yeah, well, that's pointing out the obvious, but how can you not love?
Like, no, I love them.
An attack on one is an attack on all.
It really is. They got that thing going. Christian in Foxborough. Go ahead, Christian.
Hey, what's up, guys? Quick, easy question. I know a lot of callers don't know how to do that. Maz, or any of you guys, do you guys think Felix Hernandez is a Hall of Famer? And if not, do you think if he has a couple good years, do you think he has a chance? Thanks, guys.
Okay, so Felix Hernandez is not even their ace anymore. Is he going tomorrow?
You know what? I haven't even looked at their rotation. I couldn't tell you.
Day two or three?
I mean, last year he went 8-14.
So, Amaz is our Hall of Fame voter. So,
I just called him up right now because I saw the caller online. And I honestly, my instinct though is no. Like, honestly, I'm not even sure he's all that close. He was a really good pitcher for a long period of time. But I'm looking at his career numbers now, and he has 168 wins. He did win one Cy Young, but my gut is instinctively was no, so I doubt I'll change my mind.
Scott in Weymouth on the Bees. Hi, Scott.
What's up, guys? Good afternoon, gentlemen. Real quick, Felga, here we go. I'm very concerned about the cockiness of the Bruins. Everyone, all I'm hearing everyone say is I can't wait to play Tampa in round two. And I'm going, are you aware Toronto could knock you off in round one? It scares me, Felga. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bees get bounced in round one.
Me neither. Toronto could absolutely beat the Bruins. Let me ask you, have you heard that overconfidence from the Bruins or just the Bruin fan?
I would just say the overall energy, fans, to answer your question. Yeah, the fans. Everyone's talking like Toronto's not there. And you know they're using that as ammo up there in Toronto.
Well, they should.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And Maz, real quick.
Go.
I love what you said. You hit the nail on the head. Opening day. There's 162 games, but there's something cool about opening day. And here we go again. Have some fun, boys. Thanks for the call.
Okay, babe, there it is. Yelly just hit a 3-run homer against the Cardinals. I got movement. I mean, I love it. I do love opening day. I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm a sucker for it. I am. It's day two through 162 that becomes a problem in baseball. Opening night, love it, love it, love it. The thing about Toronto, absolutely
this
can beat you.
Baseball!
Thank you, Mad Dog. Absolutely, Toronto can beat you. Without question, they can beat you. They're better than you up front.
I mean, their forwards are ridiculous.
Tremendous.
I'm sorry.
And they're faster than you.
Yeah.
Goalie's a gutless puke.
So remember last year.
How's your goalie?
That the Maple Leafs lost Kadri there for a little bit in that series, too.
That's right.
So like, you know, there are a lot of elements. I just got too much respect for their skill group up front. Like, you can't take them. If the Bruins slip up like they did against Tampa the other night, Toronto will score 7 goals.
Okay, I'm with you. You want to weigh in on the Bees? You can. We've asked the question, what can bring down the Red Sox this year? What would it be? The bullpen's an obvious answer. Is that the answer? Or is there something else? We'll get back to that question with your call. 617-779-0985 after Murray's 90-second update. No commercial.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.